Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett, and today we are taking a look at the free agency and trade period that seems to have been going on for the whole month of October, but it has actually, in fact, only been a week. And as usual, to help with the talk is Stevie Fizz. How are you, pal?
I'm doing all right. Been having these HelloFresh meals delivered, Jono, and it sounds easy, but these are some elaborate goddamn meals. I've got to say, it takes about an hour to sort these things. I mean, delicious, but I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it if you're a steak and chips kind of guy.
So it's not like a U Foods type bunging in the microwave.
No.
3 minutes?
No, it's about, it's a, have about 28 different ingredients, sit around, cancel your dinner plans, because these are your dinner plans. Not great. And I can't recommend it at all. So that's our ad for HelloFresh.
Oh, there you go. I've never heard of it, and probably won't plan on using it, because it just sounds like normal cooking to me.
It's worse. I mean, worse. The food's okay. Good, but it's too hard. Well, not hard, but just annoying.
So cook by numbers, add salt.
I don't need coriander. Like, I like it, but I need that fruit prepared. I need it prepared for me. I don't prepare. I used to be a chef. I don't want a chef anymore. No. Yeah, anyway.
And, folks, he is back from his media suspension for dropping the C-bomb live on television. It is the man himself, the Statesman. Welcome back, pal.
Piss off, you lot. Now, I will say, I come from Tassie. We don't have meals delivered to us. We walk out the backyard, go to the garden, pull the vegetables out, pick the fruit from the trees, bring them inside, cut them up. We heat a few when we want a warm meal or we want to make a soup, or we chuck it in the blender and beautiful juice with the Nutro Bullet there, gentlemen. Absolutely wonderful. Ready to go. Straight out of the garden vegetable. Not sitting there all packaged up, prepared. That's ridiculous, gentlemen. Get with the times. Eat straight from the garden. But it was a wonderful time. All expenses paid trip interstate to the wonderful Byron Bay. Just got back. Beautiful warm weather there. And it's even hotter in Tassie. Unbelievable.
No, I don't believe it.
It is a beautiful 27 degrees today. I think it's 29 tomorrow. It's wonderful.
Jesus. Do you shoot the meat?
Sorry, mate?
If you want a steak, do you actually have to go out and kill the cow yourself as well? Is that...
Don't pull guns in Tasmania.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't worry about the animal products. You've got all the fresh fruit and veggies. We all know they're good for you. Get into them.
Fresh seafood too. Just throw a rod in the ocean, you'll be right.
The seafood?
Seafood. Oh, the only thing you need to go to the shops for is your Pinot.
Well, you've got a whole vineyard, so you wouldn't need to.
Shoes off.
Just ring the butler.
That's it.
Press 9.
Press 9. I like that. But a little bit of news coming out over the week. There has been some trades being done, but we're going to save them for next week's show. Statesman, I don't know if you saw this, but your man, Lachie Weller, wants a trade to the Gold Coast Suns. I'd be interested to see if it will happen.
I did shed a tear. I gave his uncle a call saying, what's going on? He did say, Statesman, don't worry about it. It's all good. He'll get plenty of the ball there at the Gold Coast.
But isn't it funny that his brother Maverick left the Gold Coast, now playing in Melbourne for the Saints?
Yeah, and I do know St Kilda tried pretty hard a couple of times to get him across. So, yeah, interesting to see if Maverick ends up joining somewhere along the line. But it's interesting with the two. Maverick certainly considers himself 100% Tasmanian. I remember young Lachie did put a bit of a tweet out there congratulating the Queensland boys for winning a game in the under-18 championships, and Maverick responded with, "You're Tasmanian, mate."
Oh, well, maybe in a few years' time when the Gold Coast fold, they can all move to the Tassie team and go from there.
It's part of our big agenda, get as many Tassie boys at the Gold Coast, then claim them back down.
There you go. But if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors or at Statesman33. We are on Facebook, search The Draft Doctors there, and also on Instagram, also searching a Facebook, searching The Draft Doctors there. But we are talking trade week and the free agency period and what sort of implications towards our fantasy games it's going to have for these people who have moved clubs. And kicking us off is the Statesman regarding the Essendon and Devon Smith trades and a few retirements there.
Yeah, so Essendon have been very active in this trade period. I honestly did not see this one coming, gentlemen. And to be honest, it's a very good move. Obviously, they've had quite a few retirements. So we're talking Watson, we're talking Kelly, we're talking Sten. So they needed to change a few things up. Now, I will say, I've been questioning their ruck line. So I thought at the beginning of the trade period that they'll target one of, whether it's Lobie, whether it's Goldstein, whether it's Proust. I thought they might shore something up, but they've actually gone basically for a defender, a midfielder, and a forward. That's their three targets. They lined them up pretty quickly. They're the three S's. We've been hearing a lot, especially if you've been listening to trade radio, for Stringer, Fassad, and Smith. So moving firstly to the great man, the lunch meat, and it's interesting that our bet lunch meat and good old pizza man are both in the trade market and both moved on to new clubs. So it'll be interesting to see how their roles get fulfilled. But it's pretty clear that lunch meat wants to a midfield role. Now, you look at GWS and you look at that very young, talented list. Lunchmeat couldn't get in there, so he ended up playing these half-forward roles, which can at times starve you of the football. That's just the reality of those type of positions. But we certainly know, and he's averaged 90 before, we certainly know when he can play the half-forward role or get a run through the midfield that he can rack up the footy. So it's pretty clear with their planning. They're losing a couple of midfielders, older midfielders, and one defence. So what they're doing is shoring up, and what they need to do is fix is get two midfielders through that rotation, someone with a bit of pace from defence, and someone up forward. So Stringer is obviously the forward player, and I know Stringer wants a bit of midfield time, but if he ever does, it's actually going to be short burst, gentlemen. So it'll be get the big body around there, but it's a five-minute burst. Saad is clearly your rebounding defender, and you talk about Tipper was that last year, but they've seen that he can do a remarkable job and be create a fair bit of forward defensive pressure. But then you look at your two midfield roles, who are they going to go to? Well, it's obvious Lunchmeat's going to be one of them. The other one is McGrath. So McGrath in his second year is going to come out of defence. Saad will take that role, so he'll be accountable but also be attacking. And you'll see McGrath actually become a midfielder, probably still get a little bit of work in defence, but will predominantly become through that midfield rotation. So the gains there, I still think Stringer is irrelevant. He's got to deliver a fair bit of scoring before I'm convinced that he's worthwhile. I think he's always going to be a better player than he is a better fantasy player. Is that fair, gents?
Totally. Sure.
The next one is Saad. Now, Saad, if you got points for bounces, then this man will be a scoring superstar. But he goes on 10 runs per game. Looks magnificent, but 10 runs is effectively going to be 30 points. So he's a man that's going to score in the 60s, maybe occasionally break the 70 and 80 barrier, but he's going to be a high 60 defender, which is really not worthwhile. That's sitting on the waiver wire. Devon Smith, on the other hand, is a magnet. Now, obviously, there's a bit of a concern about his body over the last couple of years, but if that gets right and he gets momentum through the midfield, he is going to be a magnificent scorer. So we're talking over-the-ton level for a midfielder. He won't be an uber premium, I don't believe. He's not going to be your 110 average. I think he's going to be between 100 and 105. So he will still keep his forward status for next year in ultimate footy. So he is going to be close to your top three forward scorers. The other one is McGrath. Now, McGrath can get the pill. He's shown even in defence that he can score really well. So I see him keeping his defensive status for another 12 months in Ultimate Footy. And I also see him scoring between the 90 and 95 as a defender. So you're looking around that top 10 to top 12 defender for McGrath. So that's really good fantasy relevance for Essendon, which I don't think they've been delivering too many premiums outside your Goddards, who's been a top 20 to 25 mid, and also your Heppel, who probably scoring hasn't been the level we were hoping he was going to be. And, of course, you got Joey Danaher as well and Hurley for defence. I think Hooker will go back. So as soon as you got Stringer, your two key defenders will be Hurley and Hooker, and that'll give the number two role to Stringer up forward. What do you think of that restructure, gents?
You don't think Stewart's going to play as a second tall on that forward line?
I've heard talk that he may, because he's very mobile, play the ugly Tom Lynch role. Sorry, okay. Good personality, Tom Lynch role. Although I don't think he's as much as a hit-up forward. In other words, I don't think he'll get as much as the ball was good personality, Tom.
Yeah.
My question's all about Devin Smith. I mean, can he be Matt Prittis before his Brownlow year sort of points?
Right. Yeah, I think he's around his peak. I think at the moment is 105, but we've never seen him in that dedicated midfield role. So this is only a prediction. He may be someone that can go a lot further than that. And I probably liken him to a Mark Murphy type, where if he's used as the link up, then that's when he might have that one year where he goes over 110, but I'm predicting more around the 105.
And what about the effect on leaving GWS? Who does that give a boost to?
Well, to be quite honest with you, it's only fulfilling a half-forward role. So the reality is that you might see Toby Green actually get up the ground a little bit more. So you're looking for someone younger on that list that'll play that more defensive forward, and Toby will play deep as well as get that space because we know he can accumulate. So I think Toby Green, which I know it sounds a little bit weird because he's been performing that role really well, but I think he just gets a bit more freedom.
Okay. Because we know Devin's been four tackles a game since he came in, and a lot of points, a lot of good points. Would you take him over Jack Billings in a draft?
Well, longer term, Jack Billings, I think, is going to keep that forward rotation.
Oh, just for this year, just for a redraft.
Yeah, I'd take the punt on Devin Smith, but you got the risk with the body. But because we know he's going to spend a lot more time in the midfield, you take the punt on lunch meat over Billings. But for a keeper, Billings all the way, because I just think Billings, even though he'll get that time through the midfield, he will remain having that forward rotation. So he is more likely to keep that forward status for a lot longer than Devin Smith. And I think the points difference will be around 5 points a game. And I think the difference of where they sit on a draft perspective is more the 10 to 15 points when we're talking midfielders to forwards.
Sure.
And we know how good Essendon's supplement program is.
Gee, just let it go, man. Oh,
never let it go.
It's never going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen. It's like the whole Stevie Mill thing. No one forgot about that.
Who?
Stevie
That's
Mill.
That's right. Let's move on. We've got fantasy to talk.
Steve, you've got the North Melbourne team, the delistings of Mullet, Gibson, and the re-signing of Waite from Scott in our email.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks to Scott for the email. We love all the questions. People take the time to hit us up on the Twitter or Facebook or email. And boys, I got some hot takes. Aaron Mullet, one of our boys, mention him in the dozen deals every single bloody week. Mention him on the pod as a pickup. He was always available and very reliable, let's be honest. He's put out some great fantasy scores for us, but I don't really have a problem with it, to be honest. Like, he could find the ball and he was great for fantasy, but as a defender, I think he was a bit lacking. Could they have kept him? Yeah, probably, but, you know, anyway, he's out. Maybe they rookie list him. I don't know. Who are the beneficiaries? I got Mitch Hibbard down as the main beneficiary from a fantasy perspective. Maybe Ed Vickers-Willis comes good. I don't know. Probably not putting my house on that one. But I think Mitch Hibbard's probably the likely beneficiary unless they pull some rabbit out of their hat and actually nab a player in trade period. Wouldn't that be amazing with all their salary cap money? Sam Gibson. I felt this was really harsh from a player perspective. No one wants to go there, but the reality is that he's 31. He's not going to be part of their next top eight assault. He's an outside mid who's below average. You know, they've got guys like Sean Attlee, Jed Anderson, Paul Ahern, whoever the heck they pick up in the draft, wanting to go there. I think it's really harsh that they'd listen to him. And, you know, from all reports, he's a good trainer, hard worker, built himself up, all that. Maybe, I don't know what their culture is like, but it seems like a strange listing. But anyway, that happened. And Jared Waite, look, I think they re-signed him because he's not really holding anyone out. And he's actually a good player. So why don't, you know, it probably makes sense to hang him around. And let's face it, he misses half the year with injury and suspension anyway. So, you know, whoever there is in the wings, like whether it's McKay, I don't know, they're playing eight ruckmen these days. So, I don't think he's exactly going to be a top 10 round draft pick, Jared Waite. We know he can score on his day. I'm certainly happy using him as a matchup play, but I think those are the reasons the moves are made. But from the outside, it just seems quite bizarre, the moves they've made for real football. But from a fantasy, I think these players are very... I mean, you're not using Sam Gibson anyway, really, are you?
Only during the bye weeks, and that's probably about it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question here, gentlemen, with North at the moment and their this management. And I'll probably enter West Coast Eagles in this too. So they're the two teams that are so heavily invested in ruckman. So we've got North that combine between their three boys and West Coast between their three boys, obviously predominantly pay packets going to one there and Nick Nat. But between the three ruckmen they've both got listed, it's probably taken up $1.5 million in their salary cap. So it's like putting the first three draft, well, let's say three of your top five draft picks in ruckman in your fantasy draft. That's basically where they're sitting at the moment. And how is your midfield, your forward line, your defence in a draft situation like that sitting if you're so heavily invested in ruckman? And it's quite amazing that your premiership ruckman's, you know, 4'2" Tasmanian with fair pants, really come off the scrap heap and was the third ruckman at Sydney last year. So I just wondered what your thoughts were there, gentlemen, and how relevant ruck are, not only to the real game, but also the fantasy game.
I'll ask you this. Of their three ruckmen, which one has any trade currency?
Well, I think you're talking North.
Yeah, North.
I think Bruce has got huge trade currency.
But they're not going to trade him. He's not. He's the one they want to build around.
He's the future.
So it's Goldstein who's going to be the traded player. But the problem is Goldstein's probably on the most coin. Look, yep. Who are North paying?
And how much? Because they got to pay what?
They have to get to
their total payments, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. Like, I look at North and I'm like, who are you paying? Like, if they trade out this, you know, guy who's probably on $600,000, let's say, I don't know, arguably, I'm not a speculator of players' pay packets, for a draft pick, which is probably what they want, or then they got to pay someone. Like, it just checks and balances at the end of the day. Like, that's all I can figure. I mean, I don't
know. The Richmond's from years ago where they're just paying overs to keep players, basically, until they get a gun in.
Obviously, they're putting some big bids on Kelly and also Martin, which didn't pan off. They're hard to get. They weren't the only clubs trying. St Kilda were trying very hard as well, especially for Josh Kelly, because it's what they needed on their list. But the advantage that North and a few of these other clubs, including St Kilda, have got is now the model. They can actually hold some of that salary cap and use it in following years. So you could be in a position, and they might be sitting back and going, okay, well, let's move on Mullet, Gibson, Swallow, and really develop these young kids. And fantasy relevance is going to be pretty big for North, you would assume, because it sounds like they're going to play and develop a lot of the kids. Now, if they develop the kids well, but then have got cashed up for the next 2-3 years, maybe they can have a serious big dash at quite a few and actually pop up from nowhere because they've been allocating a fair bit of salary cap for the following years.
Well, next year they should be, you know, they could grab two. Like, Tom Lynch wants to come home, here you go. They'll have the number one pick. I don't know. And apparently there's some big key forwards who are up for the number one pick.
Rory Sloane's a free agent next year. So,
well, you know, it's all speculation, but...
Of course.
You know, there'll be points to be had in that North Melbourne back line, and that's just kind of the way they've gone. So I don't know. It's not a bright scene down there, but that's all there is on that one. I don't particularly have any great feelings towards it. I can't rant about it because I just, you know, the players we're talking about losing are very replaceable. That's the reason why Mullet was on the waiver wire every week.
Yep, very true. And I will say on the footy perspective for North Melbourne, we had a group trying to oust the footy department, the coach and the CEO of Richmond only 14 months ago, and look where they are now.
Mutiny. Bring it on.
All right, we're going to move on now to the Western Bulldogs, where they have signed the ruck forward defender in Jackson Trengove as a free agent. We spoke about this a few weeks ago, Steve, on our where we'd like to see players go, and I said I'd like to see Trengove go to the Bulldogs because I see him playing as that main ruckman, where Jordan Rufford's been playing it the last couple of years. Jordan Rufford's going to go back into defence to play that number one defender on the big monsters, which is also going to help Marcus Adams as well. Yeah, he's had a bit of injury in his couple of seasons so far, but he's had to take the number one forward. But he's also actually scored quite well in both formats in the mid-80s. So now if he's taking a lesser defender, that could help his scores to maintain there in those mid-80s, which I'd be quite happy to have any day of the week in my defence. But Jackson Trengove, if he's playing the main ruck, we saw him in 2016 when Paddy Ryder was out through the suspension. He actually had his best fantasy year in his time in football, but it actually wasn't something that was quite usable. Yeah, he's he was pinch hitting in the defence as well at that time, where he probably will do with the Western Bulldogs, but it wasn't built on hitouts. His score was actually built on disposals, tackles, and clearances. And when you've got a midfield that both Dalhouse, Bont, and Liberatore, I don't know if those clearances and tackles are going to come his way. For me, I did actually use him over the bye rounds, and he was quite serviceable, but I don't see him as a starting player for me next year in Jackson Trengove. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he might be someone I look to. Maybe if I've just completely avoided rucks, or maybe in an ultimate where you need a bench ruck, he might be an option if he gets that ruck status. I don't even know that he'll get ruck status, quite frankly, going into next year. So, I mean, if he's a forward, you know, if he gets that role that you're talking about, he'll be fine.
He'll be mid-70s, probably at best, I'd say.
Oh, look, I think he could be low 80s.
Low 80s, yeah.
Yeah,
I've been pretty conservative on that one.
Just depends on the role, Tom Boyd's health.
Yeah, and if Ruffhead does maintain that key defender, which you never know with crazy Luke Beveridge, they might put Libba in the ruck, who knows?
Well, it's on the cards.
Yeah, just got a question, gentlemen, on Hayden Crozier's signing. My immediate reaction was, what do they need another halfback flanker for? And maybe I was skewed a little bit by the way Fremantle used him in that sort of role for the past season and a bit on the wing and a bit on the halfback flank. But there's so many similar types within the Western Bulldogs. But then I thought about it more, and the more I thought about it was the case of he was an elite marker, especially in his junior days. In fact, he won some awards for one of the most outstanding marks actually seen in the under-18 national championships. And I actually just wonder whether they're being pretty smart here and doing the old money ball theory and looking at him being potentially a string of replacement and being a target up forward, gentlemen.
Yes, that's something I never considered. I know we saw him play up forward for Freo this year, and everyone thought, what the hell is crazy Ross Lyon doing? But yeah, I saw him going to that Matthew Boyd, Bob Murphy role, just running it out of the defensive 50 line and getting it inside 50 as that kind of Lockie Hunter and 40 other different types of Bulldogs on that list. So it could be an interesting ploy, because it's something the Bulldogs do lack, and that's marks inside 50. My question is, he isn't the tallest bloke there. He's only about 185 centimetres, so not too sure how well that's going to work if that's the case. If he was a high flyer back in his day, but I suppose it wouldn't matter.
Same height as Gary Ablett Senior, mate. So sometimes height's not everything, and Clint Bizzle, his replacement, which was touted back in the day, was a similar height as well. It's just a slight warning for those people that might get excited thinking Crozier's going to get a halfback role for the Western Bulldogs, that maybe hold off and drafting him early. Let's see what his role is, because if his role is deep forward and to take that contested mark and kick two or three goals a game, then I would suggest he'll be a lower scorer than what his halfback or wing role would be, and would suggest that you'd see Johannesson and Lockie Hunter getting moved out of that forward stream to actually go back to those roles that they were really good performers in previously.
Mm. And if he does go back, you got Biggs in that back line as well, who had been performing quite well.
Your thoughts, Steve?
Oh, look, I think it makes sense, because we also, on top of those things, we know he's a good kick. And one thing the Western Bulldogs have struggled with is accuracy in front of goal. So, it makes sense. And, look, I certainly wouldn't be pushing my chips in on him. I might take a flyer on him, but that's sort of where I sit on that situation.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't see him first 10 rounds. He's more one of those lottery picks towards the back of your draft, for sure.
He's a 16, 17 round sort of guy.
Oh, for sure. And if you are enjoying the show, you can check us out on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and iTunes. If you really love the show, please take a couple of minutes, hit the five-star rating, and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. It helps our brand get us out there. And hit that subscribe button so it gets to your device each and every week without you having to lift a finger. But moving on now to the West Coast Eagles and their retirement statesman.
Yeah, so Mitchell, Prittis, Petrie, Butler retired. I think the main two we need to talk about there is the inside ball with Mitchell and Prittis. Now, we know Prittis was on a little bit on the outer at the end of the year, but I think there's some big winners here. And I know one we'll probably talk about a little bit more next week is Archie, but let's wait to see how all the chips fall with them. So we'll just talk about the people currently on their list. So Dom Sheed should be the biggest winner when it comes to the inside ball. So we should see Dom Sheed actually move out from being on the outside and more to being on the inside. Again with Sheed, I'm trying to predict if he was a inside midfielder the predominant amount of time, of what his level of scoring should be. And I'm thinking he's just under a Prittis. So I don't think he's the type of tackler like Prittis was, but I think he can actually use the ball by foot a little bit more regularly. So I think the scoring will even out. So I think, again, he's that type where he's a 100 averager or 105 averager. I don't think an uber premium, but I think he should be somewhat decent value. It'll be interesting. I doubt if he would have forward status like he gained in a couple of the formats. I think he'll be a mid and a mid only. So I think he's about a mid range. You're talking round 8 to 11, where you want him to be your M3, M4, is probably his position. Jack Redden is the other one that should get a lift, and it's just a bit more in job security, but it'll also be in role security, where he won't find himself out on the flanks like he did a little bit over the last couple of seasons. We know he had an absolute shocker 2 years ago where he averaged in the 60s, but it was really just more the opportunities. So I think with Pritis and Mitchell out, you should see Sheed and Jack Rennan. The only problem is, you're talking same-same, but we talked about this with West Coast Eagles. Now, Shuey can break lines, but he doesn't break lines like a Kelly does, like a Martin does. So they'll still be in the hunt for someone really, really special. Have they got that on the list? I don't know as yet, to be quite honest with you. They've got some young kids with a bit of promise. I think young Luke, Parlington, is it Parlington?
Yep.
Should go reasonably well. But I don't think, again, that he's a line breaker. I think he's just a good citizen. And that's what I see Redden. That's what I see from Sheed. And a little bit flashier, but that's also what I see out of Luke Shuey. So they'll want someone who can break the lines. Now, that's where maybe an Archie can become for them. So that's why I see that, and that's more for next week's discussion. Once we see what their roles are going to be, is you might see Archie come really out of the box, get the opportunity to really take it on. The other big winner that I see coming through, because they've all been shared roles, is Liam Duggan. I think he will square away a halfback role, and I think he'll be a very good scorer for them. So we're talking a very good scorer in the defence is your 85+. So I think that's the type of level that he can go through. If he's not a defender at the start of the year, he will be for those formats that change by round 6 to round 9. And I think he'll cement that role at half back. So my winners there are Sheed and Redden, although I don't see either of them being ubers. And I see Liam Duggan being getting some great roles coming through that defensive side and getting the role as a defender through the majority of the formats. What's your thoughts, gents? Oh, sorry, I should mention Petrie won't affect because you get Lysett, Nat Nui, and where Vardy sits into it is a big question right now. I think if you look at this year's form and if they're both fit, I think Nat Nui and Vardy are the actual two they'll go with, because I think Vardy gives more in the forward line than Lysett does.
I can't believe you didn't put Jonathan Giles on the run sheet either.
No. Yeah. My producing skills are at their zenith. I worry about Luke Shuey, man. You're talking two Brownlow medalists going out of there. I know they both weren't super hot last year, but I got to think he will just be tagged into the ground every week. We know he can crumble under it a little bit, and you got to think the quality of ball use in the midfield isn't going to be as strong as it was. Do you see it the same way? I don't think I could be drafting Luke Shuey.
You think it's kind of Shuey or Gaff?
Luke Shuey.
Shuey?
Yeah, I think Shuey and Gaff will share the tag.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
And it actually might be swapped quarter by quarter.
It's interesting.
I'd tag the goal kicker.
Kennedy.
Shuey kicks goals, man, for a mid. He's good. Anyway.
Would they go to Yeo at all, or just... No.
Well, Yeo is that interesting one, because he can be a line breaker, but is he going to be a consistent big-time scorer mid? If Duggan and Yeo are on the half back line, and that is, you've got to find that line breaker. if you find the line breaker and you can have those two on the halfback flanks, all of a sudden it's a very, very attacking defensive unit. And I think Yo showed the first half of this year his best footy is at halfback flank.
Absolutely.
For sure. Moving on now, we're going to talk about Rocky signing as a free agent to Port Adelaide. Steve?
Yeah, really one of the bigger moves of the year, free agency period, I guess, is Tom Rockliffe moving to Port Adelaide. And it's sort of come out, they're talking a 60% forward role, 40% midfield time. It can't be good for anyone. It cannot be good for anyone, people.
And that includes Bo Gray, Wingard, the whole bloody team, really.
Look, it includes everyone in the land, quite frankly, and they're talking about... Look, the good thing is we've seen this from Robbie Gray this year, that he was basically camped in the forward line. Except for when the game was on the line, they threw him in the midfield. My personal feeling is that he was carrying an injury most of this year, and that's why he was camped down there, but... he'll have forward status next year. So I kind of like that. I think he's actually the best of all these guys to draft. I think Wingard, you can forget that midfield time he was getting this year. Maybe they stay in there. I don't know. But for me, it caps Rocky. I could see Brad Ebert moving back out to a wing. We know he's played that in the past. Wines has to stay in the midfield. This is the big problem, though, is... when Rocky is in the midfield, he wins the clearances. He wins an extremely high percentage of his team's clearances. So Wines also does the same thing. We know he's not a real great transition player, Wines. So does that cap him? I can't think it helps. My feeling is across Port Adelaide as a whole, I'm happy drafting Robbie Gray, especially in Supercoach. Obviously, we know he's a bit of a stud in that format. But everyone else, I'm sort of lowering the bar a little bit. And Tom Rockliffe, I just can't draft him with the idea that he's my captain option, if that makes sense. Because I think he's one of those guys, when you draft them, when he plays, you generally put the C on him, Staceman. But otherwise... but if he's in this role of 60% forward, I don't know, and we're going to hear a lot of talk in the preseason, probably from the Dream Team Talk Boys, about the pig getting forward status. Now, I do not want to bank on anyone getting any status. That is just a recipe for disaster. If you were, like we were talking 8 months ago, 10 months ago, about Brent Stanton getting defensive status and how that was going to be an absolute burn. Well, it just never happened. But I just think it's a recipe for disaster when you're banking on someone getting a position change. Because, well, what happens if Sam Powell-Pepper does a knee in the preseason? Bang, Rocky's pure mid the whole time. And I mean, that's great for his scoring. So I just, look, for me, he's a third round kind of pick. But that's Rockliffe I'm talking about, and I really have a hard time. I've started doing my rankings already, and I've got Wines as an M4, so he's in the 30s for me. Look, you're talking about a guy who averaged 28 possessions a game this year. That's his highest, so I don't know. What are your thoughts, guys?
I'm really interested in Port Adelaide's move because it's all in or nothing. So they've gone Rockliffe, 27 turning 28, Motlop, 27 turning 28, and you've got Watts, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think he's around that 26
27 years of age.
Yeah, 27 turning 28. So there you go. You've got three players turning 28 next year. Now, they are in the prime of their footy careers, but you've got Ebert, you've got Motlop, you've got Watts.
Boak.
Boak. You've got Boak. You've got Westhoff. You've got Ryder, you've got Hartlett, you've got their other recruit, I can't remember, you've got Robbie Gray. In 5 years' time, all of them are gone. They're Rockliffe as well, that's the one. Dixon's 27 turning 28, is another one that's gone. So I reckon they've got a three-year window to win a premiership. Otherwise... they are losing the majority of their high-end talent. they'll be left with Powell, Pepper, Wines, Wingard for a few more years, Bonner, Tumpus maybe if they keep him, Carl Amond, Houston. That's sort of what they're going to be left with. So you can see that it's a similar issue to what North Melbourne had to go through last year. It's all in. Where you look at Essendon and the three they've brought in, now I will say Port Adelaide have done this at the least expense when you're talking draft picks, etc. But Essendon have brought in three players, or bringing in three players, that are 23, 24. So they've got a longer run.
Building a nucleus to their team and not just eggs in one basket.
So they're going for a 5 to 8 year run. So sustained success rather than premiership right now. And maybe it's just Hinkley saying, right, we've had the slow build. While we've got these guns right here, right now, we've got to have a crack at it. And we need to fix a few things. We need a bit more top-end talent. We need a bit more run and carry. And we need a bit more pure midfield grunt, which I'd be very surprised if Rockcliffe is a 40% forward. If you're bringing Rockcliffe into that
60%
list now,
forward.
Well, I don't understand that. He's if you're bringing him in, he's in the midfield because you've already got Wingard, you've already got Robbie Gray, you've already got Sam Gray, you've already got Need, you've got Jack Watts, you've got Charlie Cameron. You should
Dixon.
Be... that's who I meant, sorry. Did I say Charlie Cameron? Sorry, Charlie Dixon. You've got that midfield... that forward line sort of... Absolutely sorted. There's enough guns in there to give you the score on the board. What you need is that midfield grunt. So I can't see how Rockcliffe is a 60% forward. He is 100% midfielder.
Well, I just think they're going to rotate Gray and Rockcliffe. Like, that's the only thing. And this is just October talk, isn't it?
But then you've got the question, how well does Gray recover from his chemo?
Well, that's a good question as well.
They do say he's going to make a full recovery, but obviously got to have some sort of effect
I actually think the big winner could be Westhoff. I could see him going back and just playing loose and just picking everything off.
I was trying to find out in that forward line, who's missing games? Because there are people missing games. They're bringing in two players, apparently, that are moving into their forward line. And I don't know if Motlop is a half forward or a winger. Now, if he's a half forward, there's three people moving out of that forward line.
I mean, Sam Gray, see you later. Forget it.
Yeah, man. No, exactly right.
Aaron Young, Jake Knee.
Well, we knew Aaron Young is looking at opportunities, been given the right to look at opportunities.
Okay, I think
Jake Knee's definitely the big loser, and so Sam Gray.
Yeah. For sure.
Let's talk about the real winners. And that is
Mitch
Robinson and Reece Matheson. Because there is a whole lot of midfield time up on the Brisbane Lions.
There certainly is.
And when we're talking midfield, we're talking the clearances. We know 21% of Brisbane clearances were won by Tom Rockcliffe last year, even with the piss-poor second half. Next in line was Mitch, after Beams and Zorko, and Steph Martin actually is one of the better clearance ruckmen, but it was... Reece Matheson will be going into his next season. Developing player, Mitch Robinson, we know, will come back. They're the next best clearance players. And also had a word that Ben Keyes is developing very nicely in the NEAFL. But there is midfield opportunities just abounding. And if any of these players have got DPP status, oh, my God.
Berry.
Yeah, I've had that. I've looked at that, and I just... Maybe. I just see the other guys as absolute clearance beasts, like whereas he can play other positions, if that makes sense. So, and I guess Hugh McCluggage as well. I mean, could he move outside, inside? Maybe. We know he's been a massive point scorer in juniors as well, but, I mean, my God. I'll be taking flyers aplenty on Lions players in the later rounds of my draft, is all I'm saying, of fantasy players.
Louis Taylor, more midfield time.
Less Louis Taylor. I'll have 0%
more Tom
ownership.
Bell, more Tom Bell.
I could get on Tom Bell.
I'm going to have a bit of a chat about the St Kilda retirements in Joey Montagna and Nick Riewoldt. I'm going to start off with Joey Montagna. I believe that his role is going to go to Jack Nunes. We have seen him move back into the fence this year, where he did get DPP in a couple of the fantasy games out there. And just going through his stats, we saw him go outside of that midfield into defense, where his rebound 50s and his meter gains were up significantly this year to previous years, where his tackles were significantly down. So not so much as playing the midfield, getting the tackles, winning his ball. He was just playing the Lee Montagna, float around that halfback, run and carry, just racking up that loose ball and launching it inside that forward 50. I do see him getting, he was around the 90s mark this year in fantasy scoring. And if he does get that DPP, then I'm all about that, especially if he's going to be scoring those 90s in any format, really.
I think Jimmy Webster might be the big winner from Joey Montagna, because I think Nunes has already got his freed up role. I don't think he's going to be a big improver from there on in. I think Webster showed in a few games that he could be that sort of rebounding runner and using that great left foot of his. And he probably just didn't get enough opportunities. I think with Montagna gone, he will pick up. And I think Jimmy Webster will push in to be a high 70s, early 80s defender.
That's what he was this year. In Supercoach, Webster was about 78.
I was talking about the format I care about.
The real fantasy, were you?
Yeah, the ones where I win premierships in. You know, those. Okay. Remember the premierships, yeah.
I remember the BBL premiership, that's about it.
Hey, if this is a cricket pod, I'm out of here.
Actually, the premiership. But the Nick Riewoldt one is actually really interesting. As we know, Nick's got that amazing aerobic capacity just to run just about every opponent into the ground, where he had three or four. But I just don't – it's just a vacuum, really, of who's going to take that role for me. I mean, you've got Bruce, Membry, and McCartan as their talls, but who's really got that running capacity to take over Nick's role? I don't see any of them doing it unless they take it in shifts, really. I mean, they're both all pretty good in the marking department. Membry had 130, Bruce had 105, so, and Nick had 126 in 17 games. So it's just going to be up in the air, and I don't know exactly what they're going to do to fill the void.
The answer is actually quite simple. You don't have Pagan's Paddock once Wayne Carey leaves your club, and you can't replace Nick Riewoldt. So you actually redesign, restructure, and try to get a structure that fits the current list. Because no offence to any of those three, they can't replace Nick Riewoldt. So don't try, because if you try, you just get the old layman's model that just doesn't work and your club doesn't succeed. So they actually have to redesign, restructure, and move past the former Nick Riewoldt football.
It'd be interesting to see how they will structure up and do that.
Game plan and tactics need to always be around the cattle you've got. You can't make Anthony Miles into Josh Kelly.
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't be blown away if we saw Blake Akers be a bit more consistent. I will say that. Because I'm with Statesman. They have to change, but he's certainly got some tricks up his sleeve.
And don't get lost. I know he's had a really bad run and the concussion issues that have gone through, but key forwards take some time. Now, sometimes they need to have that pure responsibility as well. So forgive me if I'm wrong, but I reckon Paddy McCartan's going into his fourth or fifth year. I'm thinking it's fifth.
I could be wrong,
but it's around the mark. They actually might just give him the forward 30 and say that's yours. Because one thing we know Paddy can do really well is take a grab and take a clean, contested grab. Then why not get Bruce to sort of play that sort of handsome Tom lead-up role and turn around and try and smack Paddy 30 metres out each time. just change your structure. You're not going to do the 120-metre leads that Rewalt used to. See if you can reinvent the gun full forward.
And we're starting to see that as well from a lot of teams, just to stay at home forward.
Yeah, I'm probably avoiding everyone in that forward line. Maybe use Bruce as a plug and play in my Supercoach options, but good luck to him.
Akers and Billings are going to be your big scorers.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, key forwards.
Go to Grant,
I should say. But yeah, no, all about all over Billings next year, massively. Yeah.
But how over
are you? The Statesman. Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that.
Can people hear my head shaking?
I could. But how over Donuts Motlop are you going to be next year, Steve?
Is that where we're going? Yeah, no, there's no Donuts Motlop for me. That is dead and buried. He couldn't have gone to a worse destination for fantasy. I wouldn't have imagined. And now Jack Watts is in as well. Boy, I'm avoiding this one like the plague. Unless they rejig their game plan. Port Adelaide were really just middle of the table for all your key scoring stats, except for goals. They're actually pretty good at that. I don't see Donuts Motlop parking himself inside the forward 50 and being a prime target to lay five snags on anyone. So I'll be looking to avoid him in all the formats, unfortunately. Maybe a change of scenery does him good. Maybe they change the game plan, but I think it's too many. You're banking on too many things for me to draft him. I think the beneficiaries on the Geelong end, well, I think, you know, maybe Geelong are hoping for some help from Nakia Cockatoo, who's certainly shown the ability to play. But I also think Lincoln McCarthy, who we didn't really see a great deal of this year, certainly shown ability at the top level. Maybe Corey Gregson, but at the end of the day, it's not a real fantasy-friendly role. Maybe Darcy Lung comes back if he's alleged a lot more midfield time. Well, who knows? It's we're dealing in round one, in week one. But I can't get on board. I can't see a beneficiary from a fantasy point of view, and I can't see a loser aside from Donuts Motlop, who you weren't really drafting anyway. On to the Andrew Mackie part of things. Did I have that on the run sheet? The run sheet's all over the shop. Yeah. Andrew Mackie, really hard to pin down for me who the player is who's going to fill this role, because I think there's three reasonable candidates who could put their hands up. And if you ask me without looking at numbers or anything, I'd say it's Jackson Thurlow that I'm holding on to a little bit of hope for. But the reality is it could very well be Jed Buse, could very well be Zach Guthrie, who we saw get some games this year. Hell, they could even throw Cam Guthrie back in defence, as they tend to do every now and again. But it's really hard down. I think Jake Colajasny's pretty pinned into his role. I think he's got his best 22 spot cemented. So I'm looking for one of those three that I mentioned potentially step up and take the role. Who it is, I'd put my round 22 pick on Jackson Thurlow, but it's October, man. I really don't have a firm grasp on it.
I think the big winner for Geelong is Menengola. And the reason is they're losing the outside run. So those that were trying to fill midfield spots that can provide outside run will go outside, if that makes sense. So in the midfield, you've already got line breakers, which are Joel Selwood and Paddy Dangerfield. So what they need is that consistent user and getter of the contested ball, and that link player that is a positional link player, not the burst and run link player. And that'll be Menengola. It just fits in perfectly for him. And I think what they've worked out is you're better off, because Guthrie can run.
Yeah.
Cam Guthrie. Mm-hmm. And he's got pace. Let's actually get him in the outside in a Motlop type role, if that makes sense, because he can put the defensive axe on, which they've worked out that Menengola is a gun player. He absolutely is. He's not going to be one that's still playing at 32, 33, but while he's in his prime of career, you should be using him in the midfield. And they were amazingly different when he got that opportunity. And I think that's what you'll find happen. So Menengola, for me, will be the big tick.
Fair enough.
Even with Ablett coming into that team? If?
Well, see, that's a big if.
Especially with Ablett.
I know that's a second week thing, but Lang gone, Motlop gone, Mackie gone. I think the key thing that they're missing is that small forward. There's no better small forward in the game than Gary Ablett. It means you manage his body better than what it has been, and all of a sudden you got a 40 to 50 goal scorer deep forward. And I think that's where they've been lacking is to confirm who's going to score the goals. That's why you throw Paddy Dangerfield to try and break it. You got Gary Ablett. They know. This is why they're trying very hard and it'll cost them reasonably big. But they want Gary Ablett in that forward line because he's going to kick goals for you. There's no doubts about it. He will cause headaches for every single team. Now, I said last year, don't draft him. Well, if he's forward and gets forward status, draft Gary Ablett.
I don't know if he'll get forward status, but it'll be a mid-year thing, you would think, wouldn't anyway?
No, of course. He's not going to start the year as a forward, but I can't imagine any other role that Geelong are thinking about because they're going, we can play him for 3 years deep forward.
Fair call. But what are your thoughts on the Luke Hodge retirement?
Yeah, obviously went for the two clubs. So I'll talk about Hawthorn. So obviously, yes, he, over his career, spent a bit of time in the midfield, but the last 5 years been predominantly off that halfback flank or deep in defence. I think the big thing that people forgetting about Hawthorn is they were without Frawley and without Stratton for a main part of the year. Those two boys will come back. So that's the reason why Gunston and Sicily were actually fulfilling those roles. So Frawley and Stratton come back. Basically, Burton will cover the Luke Hodge, be the link player, be the floating third man up in the marking contest. So Ryan Burton becomes the big winner of Luke Hodge leaving because there were times this year where he had to fulfill a key defensive post. He will get totally freed up. They want the ball in his hand. He's a great user of the footy. So Ryan Burton will actually become, on his third season, a premium defender. I think Gunston will move back forward, and I think you should open up with Sicily that he might be the one that plays a bit of both, depending what the needs are game sense-wise, because Stratton and Frawley are a bit more closed down, and we saw Sicily play that sort of link role. I think that's more Burton, but Sicily could do it as well.
No, fair enough. I saw an interesting thing on Instagram, actually.
Go for it, mate.
Yeah, I had the photo of Hodgie and Sam Mitchell at the Hawthorn Best and Fairest, and just there, the first team to like the page was the Brisbane Lions. very interesting right there.
I know we talked a little bit with Rockcliffe, but I think Hodge will play about the 15 games. So my question was, well, what effect would that have for Brisbane? It's really only Rocky out for Brisbane at the moment, so currently out of that starting lineup. So I'm thinking who's the one from the second half of the year that gets pushed into the forward line. So it's Robertson and Bell, but maybe, and it's more second week talk, of whether Cameron fills that role. So they want someone a bit more nippy around, and I think he's got the role. So it's probably the fringe players like your Clay Beams or your Robertsons that will actually miss out. So what it actually creates is shores it up. I don't think it changes the defence too much. Shores it up, better leadership, especially around those young defenders, your Cutlers and co. And the forward line will be the biggest thing that actually changes. And as we talked about, there'll be a few younger bids that get a bit more opportunity. So look, a smart move by Brisbane when you look at it because they needed that on-field leadership, especially with all the young kids in defence. I think it's a smart move.
Yeah, totally agree. And the last trade we got here was the Jake Lever trade off to Melbourne. I have got no interest in Jake Lever next year if he's going to play that key defender lockdown role. They've got plenty of those interceptor rebound types for me. He only averaged 70, in the 70s this year in both formats, so not really draftable whatsoever. If it is going to affect anyone, it's Oscar McDonald, who was playing that second defender, and even he was scoring in the mid-70s as well, so not really draftable. But it could free up Tommy Mack to do whatever the hell he wants, maybe push forward against with his old mate Jesse Hogan to kick big bags, Steve. So I know you're pretty hot on that.
Jake Lever's a third tall. He's a peel off. We're listening to the drill today, and he gets spanked in the one-on-one, so he'll have his games. I think it can be all right, but
just a matchup dependent.
Yeah, I think so. I think he can develop. He might be a great super coach player down the line, to be honest.
I suppose he's only 21, isn't he? So he's going to be there for a long time, and roles can change.
In a football sense, you part with two first-round draft picks and part with the number one pick in Watts, and you bring in a third-year, third defender who gets beaten one-on-one, and bring in a couple of second round draft picks. It's funny, people are talking about him being the winner at the moment. I'm a little bit unsure about that.
So am I.
But, I live with Melbourne supporters, so we'll see.
If there's broken windows and...
Well, with what's going out, all I can assume is that we take Cam Pedersen's average from this year and add Jack Watts's to it. And that's what Cam's going to average next year.
Are we seeing clubs very quickly converting to the one forward only after Richmond's success with Jack Rewalt?
Well, Doggies had it as well.
They had no forwards.
They had a semi-tall who just got it to the smalls, and like the Tigers this year.
So shore up your defence. Make sure you've got a good, strong, but versatile midfield, and let the small fellas like Petrarca and co kick the goals for you.
Well, look
and
at
who
Hawthorne.
Cares about a ruckman?
That Hawthorne were playing an 8-man defence for the second half of the year. And they didn't lose too much.
No.
It's interesting. If you think you only got one thing missing, it's probably not wrong to go out and just make sure you fix it. And only time will tell if Melbourne's done the right thing or not. Maybe I look at the checks and balances a bit too much at times.
I always think if you can get elite talent, you get talent. Like, you know, they can have a draft pick and it turns out to be Richard Tambling, or he can
is that why you guys pay me so much?
Yep. That's right.
That makes sense.
We're going to put a call out on Twitter.
We are the Richard Tamblings and you are the Buddy Franklin.
That's
funny.
Well, let's talk about something that really is funny.
That really is funny. Thanks for taking my line there, Steve. We had Twitter blowing up, and it's just not about my comments about the classic Super Nintendo. It's actually about sports comedy movies and what are our favourites. So the guys from OTLS asked us what our favourite sports comedy movies are, so we've done a bit of a top five. But before we start, Steve, I've got to ask, Big Lebowski, is it a sports comedy or not? Because it changes my top five completely.
Well, this is the thing. We were talking about this before, and I hadn't even considered it, to be honest, because, we both know we're huge Big Lebowski fans.
For sure.
Look, I've never thought of it as a sports movie, but realistically, sport is central to the theme.
That's right. So,
is Running Man a sports movie?
With Arnie?
Yeah.
That's
him. Is
Forrest Gump a sports movie?
Well, look, that's right. And realistically,
long stretch, gentlemen.
Because this is a comedy list, and I have Run, Fat Boy, Run. I didn't make the list because I don't think Running. Look, it's a great movie. But running's not a sport, it's an exercise. Let's be honest. So, I don't know. Big Lebowski, that's a blurred line.
If people want to include it, then it's my number one. If not, I have a different number one.
Although the number one event at the Olympics is a running event.
But the Olympics is, who cares? Who cares about the Olympics? Does anyone watch the Olympics?
So, Steve, starting from number five, give us your top five sports comedy movies.
Look, can I throw out a couple honourable mentions? Because this was bloody hard.
No. I think you go the top five, and then I will raise the honourable mentions, and then you can mention ones after that if they haven't been mentioned.
Okay.
Otherwise, you get a top 28, and the rest of us get to mention one.
It's actually 32. Wow. Anyway, coming in at number five is White Men Can't Jump. Love that. Very, very funny movie. Very funny. Statesman doesn't understand basketball, so he's obviously shaking his head. It's the super coach of sports, so he's going to hate. He's going to hate the rest of my list because there's no football on it. But I love White Men Can't Jump. Very funny. A lot of quotable lines. I always think quotable lines is a big thing. And not much of a love story. I've got to be honest. If there's no love story, I love it. That's get rid of
I don't know. I think Woody Harrelson and Rosie, what's her name, Perez.
She's a bit good. Yeah, she wasn't in it much. She doesn't speak much. Anyway, coming to number four, Kingpin. Now, if you've never seen...
just missed out on my top five, actually.
If you've never seen Kingpin, it is the GOAT Bill Murray effort of anything. The last scene is just fantastic. The Farrelly brothers, we know they're fantastic filmmakers. Very funny stuff. I love Woody Harrelson. Great movie. Get around Kingpin. Number three, Bull Durham. I couldn't get away from it. I love Bull Durham. It's one of my favorite movies. Got it on DVD. Kevin Costner breakout role. And Ron Shelton's first film. Ron Shelton, if you're not familiar, as some people aren't apparently, is the GOAT sports movie maker. White Men Can't Jump and a few other ones. Great White Hype, no big deal. Bull Durham, fantastic movie. The only thing that brings it down is the love story is pretty paramount to the goddamn plot, which kind of kills it. But if you like baseball like I do, it's fantastic and very, very funny. A lot of breakout performances in that. Number two, Major League.
So I do know what your number one's going to be.
We all know what number one is, but Major League is fantastic. Baseball, the ultimate, you know, it's the age-old classic of the bunch of bums thrown together to usurp the power. You love it, but no one does it better than the Wild Thing. Charlie Sheen.
Pedro Serrano.
It's just fantastic characters. But number one, it's got to be Talladega Nights. It is the most quotable goddamn sports movie I've ever seen. Statesman shaking his head. I reckon there's a 90-minute Subway commercial he reckon should be in the list. But Talladega Nights, I can't get past it. It's too funny. It's the best Will Ferrell sports comedy. No, the other two are fantastic, but especially Blades of Glory. But for me, Talladega Nights, there's just too many quotable lines in it, and it has to be in there for me.
Now, I'm not against your number one, but I can't believe that one movie didn't get in your top five.
I haven't had my top five. Yeah, so let Jono go. Number five, White Man Can't Jump. It's a classic. Grew up on that movie back in the 90s when basketball was all the rage. And number four, Happy Gilmore. Can't go past it.
Can't go past that 90-minute ad for Subway.
I grew up with that movie when I was a teenager growing up. Can't go past it for me. Many memories watching that film. Number three, another golfing movie. Basically, an institution in the Crockett House was Caddyshack.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to complain.
There's going to be some hot takes about Caddyshack.
Look, that was one of the first movies I was introduced to, that and The Evil Dead, when I was 8 years old. So Caddyshack is on there. I've got it on DVD. I've got it on my hard drive. I've got about four copies of it, actually. Love it. Just some, again, really quotable lines, like you said, Steve, in some of your movies.
Happy Gilmore has more quotable lines.
I think Caddyshack's got more. Number two for me was Talladega Nights, and number one for me, Major League. Can't go past it. Watched them both, one and two, the last couple of nights. Love them. And just to miss out is also Kingpin for me, and I do love The Replacements. A very underrated movie.
Falco.
Is there another 15 you would like to list there, Jono? I will mention a few gentlemen. Varsity Blues is incredibly funny.
It's not a comedy. It's not a comedy.
There's another one that isn't a comedy, which I think is quite funny when you look back at it now, which is The Club, great Australian drama with Graham.
I knew he'd bring it up.
Did we talk about that last week?
Yeah, it was sensational. Absolutely sensational, that movie. Of course, Caddyshack would have been my number one. Another one that I thought was remarkably funny is The Waterboy. Yes, not as good as the 30-minute Subway ad, but The Waterboy is a ripper. And we can't miss out on Will Ferrell's number two sports movie being Blades of Glory. I think, and I'm shocking, I can't think of the name, but it's, yes, I can. Dodgeball should have been mentioned, although I wouldn't put it in the top five, but it's a bold strategy. Let's see if it works. And of course, just one for the teenagers, the Benchwarmers.
That was horrible.
Yeah, that's
terrible. I said for the teenagers.
Even for teenagers, that was horrible. It was.
Right. You can do it.
My honourable mentions were Happy Gilmore, Blades of Glory, and Crackerjack.
But there's also one with...
Oh, Crackerjack was a ripper. Yeah, good one.
Well, I mean, Jono and I actually met through Lawn Bowls, so it's we've got to give a bit of love to Lawn Bowls.
Is that where the romance started?
Yeah.
Certainly did. Watching Steve getting his ass handed to him by an Australian champion in the under-30 single that I was umpiring and just heckling him as an umpire. It was great.
So the first time we ever played together, we won money.
So you didn't run the marathon with Cane Corns, is that what you're saying, gentlemen?
That's true.
God, no. But there's also one we forget is basketball.
No, I didn't forget it.
Didn't forget it?
Didn't forget it. I love the movie, but it's not that great. I like Dodgeball, but it's only because of the commentators and the coach.
Oh, yeah.
Because how can you like a Vince Vaughn movie that much, really?
He's Vince in the Vaughn's movie?
Yeah, Vince Vaughn's the worst, man.
I've just got a Vince Vaughn film on my TV.
He's surely got a couple of good ones.
Swingers, yeah. I was going to say this about Caddyshack. Caddyshack is the most overrated movie of all time.
No.
The Carl Spackler character is maybe Bill Murray's worst role. It's not funny in any way. I really don't understand how anyone enjoys it. The whole movie's just a total shakedown. I mean, if you think picking snot jokes is great, I mean...
That's awesome. And they're gambling on it.
No, we're gambling on the kid. The only good bit's when, you know, she's, you know, let's be honest. Right, I don't want to come across like Harvey Weinstein too much, but...
No. So a couple of Vince Vaughn, because we've got to mention this, in one semi-sport, Old School.
Yeah, Old School is good. I liked Old School.
It's a good movie. Right. Dodgeball is a good movie. Anchorman. Just quietly, is a good movie.
Anchorman is unwatchable trash.
Now, Anchorman 2 was unwatchable trash.
No, Anchorman 1 was unwatchable trash.
No.
Anchorman 1 was good.
He's Wes Mantooth in that. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Will Ferrell's best ever movie.
I'm sorry, I just said Talladega Nights was his best movie. But, I've never seen a more divisive movie. You either love it or you hate it. You don't just go, Anchorman. Because the people who don't like it freaking hate it. And the people who love it, love it.
You're the first person I've ever heard say they hate Anchorman.
No, I know a lot of people who don't like Anchorman.
I've met a few.
And it's always hateful, isn't it?
To be fair, I don't speak to many people, so
there's not many people in Tasmania, so there you go.
Yeah.
I'm well above them, you see.
I'm pretty sure it's just you and Warnie, and you live at each end of the state. Maybe a couple of dealers at Rest Point, I don't know.
But no one has electricity in Tassie, because him and Warnie have it all. They just filter through.
My butler, I speak to my butler.
Do you speak to him or do you speak down to him?
Down to him, yeah.
But But yeah, you got to agree, Jono. The people who don't like Anchorman hate the shit out of it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Some fierce conversations after about six beers after about Anchorman. That's for sure.
It's unwatchable.
Wow, yeah. I've never heard that. Can we have a poll? Is Anchorman watchable? Can we have that on the Draft Doctors?
We can do that on Twitter poll.
We'll put up love or hate. How's that?
Love or hate Anchorman. Yep, that'll be fine. Thank you. Let's do that.
The only thing that's come out of Anchorman that's good is memes. And GIFs.
And the revival of Christina Applegate's career.
Why is that good? Why did we need that?
She was attractive in Married with Children. Still pretty good in her
own. Why did we need to revive it?
Hey, people got to work, man. Put food on the table. I don't know, did Harvey Weinstein get the job? I don't know.
Oh, that's a good point.
And on that note, we will...
Is Harvey Weinstein running the new AFLW franchises? Is he looking for work, probably?
I think we'll leave it there. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we're at The Draft Doctors, at Statesman33. Check out the Facebook, search The Draft Doctors there, and the Instagram, The Draft Doctors as well. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, we'll be talking about week two of Trade Week and the free agency. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.